Okay, friends, you know what that sound is? That is the sound of yet another...
Kevin, another Twitter-pated episode of VA Radio.
And I remember that adjective from Bambi.
Really?
The Disney animated film Bambi. Because Thumper, I think, the rabbit, got Twitter-pated at some point.
Well, that makes sense, as the definition is in a state of nervous excitement.
You know, there you go. And that's so true.
Every day.
And all these years, I think my dad used to use Twitter-pated, and I never really quite knew what the hell it meant.
Well, I'm glad I could help you out.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're done.
Dig it. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Oh, man. Well, I'm your host, Kevin Oste, joined by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Ubal Clark, on this Twitter-pating episode of V8 Radio. And we've got some big news this episode.
Oh, we do.
We do. And it's fantastic. And I have to be...
I mean, yes, we do.
Correct. Well, we got to be careful in how we disseminate this information, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
We have just been picked up by the Amazon podcast streaming service.
Oh, that's right. We have.
Which is dynamite.
That is big news.
Which means now, and here's where I have to be careful, you can address your smart speaker by its female name and say, hey, you know who you are, play the V8 Radio podcast. And the reason why I'm tiptoeing around that is because I don't know if I say... Hey, Alexa, play the V8 Radio podcast, and somebody's playing it through Alexa. Will Alexa hear me say that and start playing over again?
It'll go into an endless loop.
Right.
That might help our numbers, though. Let's do it.
Oh, that'd be fantastic, yes. Hey,
Alexa. Play the V8 Radio podcast.
But how cool is that?
That's very cool. I was excited to hear about that. I really was.
It is exciting, and I know that in the past, I had about a 50% success rate with having Alexa play the V8 Radio podcast through the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, really?
Yes, that works occasionally.
Interesting.
But now, and the key to this whole thing is we kind of changed the name, because originally it was just V8 Radio, right. But now our official name is the V8 Radio Podcast, and if you say all that, you'll get our latest episode, so that's pretty cool.
That is cool. I'm going to try that tonight.
Right on. Do you have an Alexa?
I do.
Yeah. What do you use it for normally?
Just playing music. It's the Alexa Home. It has like a display on it,
like
a monitor display, and you can just, you know, play different playlists, and it'll show videos and stuff. That's
you
that's
got the fancy one.
Oh yeah, it's how I roll, man. Top shelf.
Well, yeah, I knew that. Mine is thoroughly mono with no display.
Ooh.
I use it for an alarm clock, and I ask Alexa to play some blues music every once in a while, and without fail, it always starts with a Tracy Chapman song that is not blues.
Really? Yeah. Oh, geez, that's weird.
It is weird, but it is what it is. So, enough about that nonsense. For those of you who listen to our show with any regularity, we appreciate that, and we appreciate we've got some recent... positive feedback and nice reviews. Thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely. That was nice. Thank you very much. Keep them coming.
And that is, I'm not so sure if on the Amazon podcast thing, if you can leave reviews, but if you feel like sharing your feelings about the show, go ahead and do that on the iTunes thing, the Apple Podcasts, because that seems to help out. And there's been a nice collection of reviews there, and we thank everybody for leaving those. But we also, for our repeat listeners, we do a little bit of automotive trivia at the beginning of each show. And as I like to say, it's kind of a bait and switch. You know, we throw the questions out in the beginning, and then we force everybody to listen if they haven't figured out how to fast forward on their Alexa.
Alexa, fast forward the Quiet. Video podcast.
Quiet. Alexa, go to the answer. Man, have you prepared a trivia question for this episode?
Yes, sir. Indeed, I have. And let's it go here. So, Kevin, we are, as we're recording this, we are in the month of October. And with that month comes Halloween.
We are in
Halloween.
The month of Rocktober.
Yeah, Rocktober, man.
That's right.
And as we know, we're approaching Halloween. And as we approach Halloween, we may see a bit of an uptick in paranormal activity.
Oh, yeah, right.
And with that uptick in paranormal activity, one may be tempted to call Ghostbusters.
Ooh.
Yes.
Who are you going to call?
Exactly. And if one did call Ghostbusters, Kevin, what car would they show up in?
Well, that is a fantastic question. And my mind actually drifted a little bit during that question.
I know.
Because the theme song.
No.
It brings up nice memories. Mm-hmm. You know, the 1984 release of the Ghostbusters film was the theme song, of course, was played by
Ray Parker Jr.
That's right, Ray Parker Jr. And that was not my favorite Ray Parker Jr. song.
No.
My favorite Ray Parker Jr. song, of course, is The Other Woman.
Yes, I do like that song, too.
It's a great song.
It is a great song.
Ray Parker Jr. was one heck of a guitar player, man.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the Ghostbuster Mobile, also known as Ecto-1, in the first film, was a 1959 Cadillac Miller Meteor ambulance, is my guess, is what they'd show up in.
That's a very specific guess, Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was a couple options back then. There was the Miller Meteor, there was the Hess and Eisenhart, and a Superior. And the Superior was more famous isn't the word, but more known for their three-way versions, which was a rear loading and a side loader from each side.
Really?
So, yeah, they had an extended length rear door on the sides, and if it was a side loader hearse, for example, the platform was electrified, and it would spin out to the side on the driver's side or out the back or out the passenger side.
Oh, wow.
Allowing you to load your precious cargo however you wanted.
Huh.
Yeah.
I did not know this.
Yeah. You know who's, interestingly enough, who's a big fan of these particular vehicles is, this is kind of a funny tangential story, but our mailman at our shop, who is not a man, it's our friend Tiffany. And Tiff, she's into Cadillac hearses and has owned many, many of these things. I think she's got a 59. I know she's got some from the 70s. I think she's had probably seven or eight of these things over the years. And occasionally they come to our shop for maintenance or whatever. And recently she picked one up that it's got a bug catcher scoop through the hood and it's got side pipes on it. And
oh, right on.
And in typical fashion, she bought this thing and the interior smelled like death.
Oh, man. Jeez.
So we helped her disassemble it and pressure wash everything and clean it up and everything. And her favorite holiday is Halloween.
Death.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Full on. So Tiff is a great friend of our shop. And we see her every day, you know, when she brings the mail. And
right on. Cool.
This is how I've learned a little bit about these vehicles is it was through her. So,
right. Right on, Tiff.
Right. Thank you, Tiff, for helping out. So that is my guess.
All right. Duly noted, sir.
All right. I also prepared a trivia question.
Okay.
And this one.
Oh, boy. Oh, God dang it. Already with the this one?
I know. I had no idea. I just learned this myself, and I'll just throw it out there. What was the Hearst Sunshine Special? It's funny, we were talking about hearses.
Yeah.
This is the Hearst. What's the Hearst Sunshine Special, my friend?
Kevin.
I know. Oh, it sucks. I'm sorry.
Your new name is Richard.
Yes. Richard Cranium, I think.
Okay, what is the Hearst Sunshine Special?
Yeah, and you might be able to...
Well, I'm going to say it was a special order package that a dealer or a manufacturer or a dealer could order for one of the cars, and the car would come in a bright yellow interior and exterior color scheme. Thus, the sunshine.
I'm writing this down. Dealer ordered bright yellow color scheme. Special ordered car, I guess.
Yeah.
That's fine. I will say that, the Hearst Corporation did a lot with performance parts and accessories.
Uh-huh.
If you kind of think in your mind of what some of those were, it might be a little bit of a clue as to what the Hearst Sunshine Special package was.
Mm. Now it makes you want to say it was they put a sunroof in.
Hmm.
Hmm.
I will just write that down.
All right.
Maybe.
Perhaps sunroof. Question mark, question mark.
Perhaps sunroof? Question mark, question mark.
Oh, gee whiz.
Well, very good. We will find out.
Yeah, indeed we will.
Yes, right on. All right, ladies and germs, you stay tuned to the end of the show when we will provide the answers, and hopefully you will not be thoroughly let down for waiting the full hour to get these. Oh, man.
Oh, good times.
It is good times.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a shout out to a loyal listener, our buddy, Mr. Jim Hall.
Oh, right on. Jim Hall. Yeah. Great guy. Yeah.
Jim is a great guy. Jim is one of those people that I've known online for over a decade and actually finally met him in person at the SEMA show. I think it was last year. Yeah, in 2019. Jim is also friends with a gentleman named Stuart Adams. And these names may sound a little familiar if you've spent any time, which I know you have, on the lateralg.com website.
Yes.
Stuart Adams owns the black 69 Camaro known as Tux, which was the Battle of the Builders winner.
Right.
Detroit Speed built feature car.
Yes,
that was
Detroit
spinning. Yeah.
I remember that car. Yes, yes, yes.
Amazing. A 9-year build. I mean, just an amazing car.
Yeah.
And it was spinning on a platform at the SEMA show in 2019 in the SEMA Central area where I was working. And I've never met Mr. Adams in person, but this gentleman approached and said, "Hey, Kev, how you doing?" I said, "Hey, great." Well, it turns out that was our buddy Jim Hall. And Jim said, "You know, the owner of this car is sitting right over there. There's Stuart Adams." So we did an interview with Stuart and Jim. It was great to finally meet him in person. And we live in an era now of social media and online relationships where you have friends that you've never met.
True. You know? Yeah, that's true.
Well, Jim has been a great supporter of our shop and all the things that we do. And recently he pointed out that he's been listening to our podcast while traveling quite a bit.
Cool. Well, thank
so
you.
It is totally worthy of a shout out. Jim, we appreciate you and thanks for listening and helping us out. And there you go, my friend.
And also, speaking of Jim Hall, his father just had a birthday. So again, happy birthday, Mr. Hall.
How about that?
Yeah. Very cool.
Wow. Also one of your friends who you've never met in person.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, funny you say that because this fantastic radio partnership began as two friends who met online who never met each other until
this
we
true.
Did.
This is true. So you got to be careful out there, friends.
Yeah. Watch out who your friend, god dang it.
You never know where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. So what else is shaking out there, Mr. Q-Ball?
Well, I know we talked about my, again, I don't have a lot of automotive stuff, unfortunately. Heck of a podcast topic, yeah. Michael. But my deck rough framing is completed, and I get it inspected tomorrow.
Right on.
And then I have a big load, just the rough framing, and then I have a load of deck boards coming on Saturday, so I can hopefully finish it up this weekend.
Well, one of the cool things I think about your deck project is just observing the advancement of some of the power tools that you're using to put this together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Because I remember my dad building a deck using a good old-fashioned hammer, and he had a screwed, well, he had a corded drill that he was putting screws in with.
Sure.
And I'm not much of a carpenter. I mean, I understand it, but I don't do much of it. But
neither am I.
You're showing me these palm nailers.
And, oh, yeah.
Screw guns that are just really making that possible.
Oh, it's some of the stuff I picked up for this, and just for this project, are worth their weight in gold. I picked up this Milwaukee Gen 3 quarter-inch impact driver, which made putting all the lag bolts in for the ledger boards the easiest thing I'd ever done. I use all screws for my joist hangers and the hurricane straps, and it made the job so much easier. And to get in the tight spots, I picked up this mini palm nailer, which would drive a 3.5-inch nail like nobody's business. Like nice. Like there was nothing there. It was amazing. Nice. Absolutely amazing. So it's
that
well
is
worth
cool.
It. Yeah. And the palm nailer was cheap. It was like $25.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Got it from our good friends at Menards.
Hey. Finish your deck with a pneumatic palm nailer from Menards. did we talk about him before? The guy who was the Menards guy? His name was Ray Zmanda?
Yeah, we have. Not on the air, though, but we were just chatting one time. We did.
Ray, the original Menards guy, is no longer with us, but for those of you who do not know Menards, it's a big box home store that originated in Wisconsin, and the pitch man was a white-haired dude with big glasses, and his catchphrase, I guess his trademark, I guess, was he would finish everything with, "From Menards," with his goofy smile at the end.
It was unbelievable.
And it was kind of cheesy, but yeah. I heard an interview with him, and he's like, you know what? That put all of my kids through college and provided a great life.
Yeah,
so
I can't,
go for it.
Can't fault him for that.
No. We've recently been having some construction done at our shop, in which we've got several buildings, and between them there was kind of this connector area, which had a roll-up garage door and a leaky roof, so we ditched the roll-up garage door and had a framed wall put in with a proper walk-through door and a new tin roof. And those guys were using similar stuff. They're using these palm nailers and you know, obviously cordless driver drills.
Yeah.
And you're right, the technology is awesome. You know, it used to be carpenters, they all look like Popeye. They had these giant forearms from swinging hammers, and you know, now they're... You don't need that anymore. Regular guys like me can do this kind of stuff just by pushing the button.
Yeah. And it gets done so much quicker.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. The one that blows my mind is our tool truck guys come by
and they
tantalize our crew with, you know, the latest technology that they'll be financing for 250
exactly.
years at $2 a week.
But, that's awesome.
Yeah, but the cordless ratchet drivers.
Yeah.
The 3/8 and 1/2 inch drivers, they're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Tons and tons of torque.
Oh yeah. And the 1/2 inch impact guns are ridiculous.
Yeah. No cord, all rechargeable. And you have your discount store brands that mm-hmm. You know, we always talk about is it worth buying the super name brand tool truck tool,
mm-hmm.
or if you're just a novice hobbyist in the garage, you know, is it a better deal to go buy the low buck version at the strip mall tool store?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I think? What we're learning is that those strip mall tools really aren't bad. They're not seeing the duty cycle.
Right.
You know, if you're not a daily professional and using this thing day in, day out. But if it's warrantied and it's a quarter of the price, you know, it's really not that bad. I hate to say that because they're all made in the place that gave us this great virus.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. Mm-hmm. But even the expensive tool truck stuff is too these days. So, I mean, how do you win? How do you win?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of your, you know, you used to see your crafts in boxes that would say made in USA. But now sometimes they say made in USA with global materials.
Or assembled in USA.
Right. Assembled in USA with global materials. So it's kind of a cheap way out of it, I think.
But, yeah. So you have to kind of balance what's the most important thing, finishing your project or purchasing more expensive tools that that were made here. And in some cases, you can't even get them.
Yep.
That's true. Doesn't matter what the price tag is.
That's a shame.
It is. I wish it was different.
I do too.
You know, and we've talked about this before, how in the reproduction parts business.
Oh, yeah.
Many years ago, I asked our friends at Year One, I said, so you guys are selling some quarter panels and reproduction body panels, and they come from overseas. You know, why can't we just make them here? And they're like, yeah, well, the initial purchase price is going to be like three times the cost. And I know, as an installer, that sometimes if you had an OE Ford or Chrysler or GM panel, you make up that three times the price by having it fit closer earlier in the project.
Right. Less labor to install it than it would be with a offshore brand.
But people don't consider that. They just look at the purchase price and then they find out later.
Yeah.
That it took extra time to modify the piece or whatever to make it fit. And at the end of the day, you know, if you're going for a restoration, a takeoff, or an NOS panel, it's your best option, except for the fact that you're going to have to restore that panel too.
Yep.
I mean, we're in the beginning of a very cool project, the shop right now. We're doing a GTX that the customer wants a Superbird tribute or clone.
Right.
And this is a car that started off as a Roadrunner, and somebody already cloned it into a GTX. So it's not a numbers matching car, and you know, it doesn't have the authenticity. So they're not worried about that. They just want a Superbird.
Mm-hmm.
So today, the differences between the GTX and the Superbird has specific fenders. It, of course, has the nose cone. It's got the wing, and it's got the scoops on the side and on the top of the fenders, and the rear window is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a company that makes a lot of really great fiberglass reproductions of those parts. There's also a company that makes a die-cast molded aluminum rear wing.
Wow.
So the uprights are aluminum, as is the spoiler part. And we're obtaining that. But I found a takeoff Superbird fender.
Really?
Yes. And the trick here is that in order to make a Superbird, you need to find coronet fenders, 1970 coronet fenders, and then you have to add an extension to the coronet fender. Well, because so many people have done this over the years, finding good coronet fenders is like impossible.
Oh, really?
So we ended up finding a coronet fender for the driver's side that came out of Washington State or Oregon, I think. And it's got a little rust in it, so we're going to repair that one and we're going to add the extension to it. But for the passenger side, we found a takeoff. And the term NOS, you know, normally means new old stock, like it's never been used and it's a Chrysler, you know, replacement part. Well, this was a Chrysler replacement part. It was installed on a car.
Okay.
And then taken off, right? So I don't know what happened to the rest of the car. But we found a NOS replacement true Superbird fender for the passenger side. And it was not cheap.
No, I was just going to say, were they giving it away?
Yeah, it was three for $8. And, you know, we had to have it shipped properly. And then when it finally showed up, the outside was stripped, but it had a little bit of surface rust and it had undercoating on the inside. Mm. And we wanted to remove all that paint. So we're using a blast company that did a soda blast.
Okay.
Which is the least destructive blasting material that I'm aware of. And they dusted this thing off and they sent us pictures and they're like, look, we know that this was like a $2,000 fender and you can't find another one. So we're not going to get super aggressive with it and we're going to send it home. So they did a pretty good job of kind of cleaning it up. Mm-hmm. But today we have been soaking it in a specially made electrolysis tank.
Okay.
We've obtained a 300-gallon tank now.
Oh, wow.
That was big enough to soak a full fender and a hood. And you power it up and you put the electrodes in it, and the rust is just kind of jumping off this through the process of electrolysis.
Okay.
And then hopefully tomorrow we'll pull it out of the soup.
But it keeps the clean metal intact, right?
Correct. It is completely non-destructive to the steel, but it makes the rust leave the panel through an electrical current, and then also a wash soda, which is like it's a borax brand powdered soap.
All right.
And you add that to the water, which makes the water more conductive to electricity.
Okay.
Which makes the process happen faster.
Oh, right on.
And then we've got this 18-volt, 40-amp power supply. And some anode rods that you submerge in the water, and then you clip the negative to the anodes and the positive to the fender, and then everything just leaves the fender or the part, and there you go. So the moral of the story is, you know, you got to take a lot of steps to preparing these parts so that they don't get all screwed up. We started this conversation talking about reproductions. Well, there is no reproduction for this, you know.
Nope. This is it, man.
So everything becomes a little bit more critical, especially when they're that expensive.
Yeah, I imagine when something is that rare and that hard to find, that expensive, you really have to be super conservative with your approach to cleaning it, especially if it does have some rust. And like you said, it has that undercoating on there. And by God, the last thing in the world you want to do is, you know, warp it or damage it somehow.
Right, right.
Oh, that would suck. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, and we're fortunate to work with a very high quality blasting company that understood that.
Yeah, that is good.
And they're like, look, we don't want to screw this up. We don't want to warp this thing. We're just going to creep into this and let you guys take it from there. So
cool. I've seen these laser units that will take off rust, but I think they're, unless it's like your core business, they're like almost prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, we priced one out and they're awesome because it is a, you know, it's like the size of, it's probably a couple feet long and maybe a 12-inch diameter tool.
Right.
And it does. It removes paint and scale and rust with a laser. And that device was $200,000.
Yeah. Have a nice day, sir. Please move along. Nothing to see here.
That's a lot of fenders.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, so we don't know anybody around us who has one of those yet. I would hire them in an instant.
Oh, for sure. Because it's, because like that word instant, it takes it off instantly.
Yes. It is a real-time removal process, and it was non-destructive. And it looked really safe to use. And we're fortunate that at our V8 Speed and Resto shop, the majority of the cars that we get through the shop are not one-off, you know, super, right. You know, we're not restoring Delahaye's and, you know,
Duesenbergs.
Yeah. We could, but most people bring us Camaros and Corvettes and Mustangs and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the parts are available, which is great. The Superbird's a little bit different because or the super bird that we're building anyway, those parts don't exist in the wild.
Right. They don't grow on trees.
Readily. Yeah. But it's going to be a great project. And yeah, you know, so once that thing comes out of the tank tomorrow, we'll still have to do probably a 180 grit DA sanding scratch on it to prep it for epoxy. Mm-hmm. But hopefully it'll be done. The other nice thing about that electrolysis process is it's zero labor. I mean, you dunk the thing and walk away.
Yeah, and get on with your life.
Yep, so everybody wins on that. So we'll report our findings. And we've been doing electrolysis for a couple of years on smaller parts. Uh-huh. This is the first time we got this larger tank. It's a 6-foot circular, 2.5-foot deep tank. So
how long is the process supposed to take for that fender?
I don't know that there is a supposed to.
It just takes keep checking it.
Yep, it's going to take what it's going to take.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, the power supply that supplies the current, like I said, it's a 40 amp thing. But once you connect up all the leads and the juice and all the rest, it's only generating an amp or two of current, just because there's so much resistance through all the stuff.
Right.
And in the past, I did a test with a brake rotor in a 5-gallon bucket, and it was a brake rotor that we were literally using as scrap. Hmm. We were using it as a doorstop.
Ah, nice.
And I thought, you know what? This would be a good test. So I dunked half of it into a 5-gallon bucket, and within 45 minutes, the half that was submerged looked like a freshly machined rotor.
Whoa.
I mean, it was mind-bending. That's how clean it was.
That's crazy.
It was. But that was putting all that current in just a small 5-gallon bucket, right. You know, probably 2.5 gallons worth of liquid. Mm-hmm. But now we're talking about, you know, we probably don't have the full 300 gallons. We probably have 275 gallons mm-hmm. of water, plus the amount of electrical resistance it takes. So it's going to slow the process down quite a bit. But you walk by and it's bubbling, you know, you see it happening, and the electrical anodes, which are attracting the rust from the part, are being covered in rust sediment.
That's cool.
It was working.
Yeah, right on.
So this thing's been in there, as I look at my clock, for about 30 hours.
Oh, right now. Boy.
So I'm expecting probably tomorrow morning that it's going to be done.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, nobody had to stand there and blast it or grind on it or sand it.
Right.
So
yeah, I'd be interested in seeing the final product on that.
Yeah, and this tank is big enough to where we can resurrect engine blocks and cranks and hoods and rear end housings.
That's killer.
Whatever we want. Yeah. And it's, again, non-destructive, so the stuff just... you end up with a fairly new-looking part, which is really cool.
Cool, man. Yeah, that's definitely a win-win. You're not paying someone to strip it or blast it. You're just paying your electricity bill to do it.
Right, and which isn't much.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're able to do other things.
Yeah. That's the goal, anyway.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Your own little dipping tank.
That's it. I really wish I had one big enough to just drive a whole car into it.
Next year, man.
Yeah.
Don't say that too loudly to Kelly. She will say, boom.
It'll happen. We went from 5 gallons to 300 this year.
Next is 5,000.
Well, I mean, honestly, like my 70 Riviera, I would like nothing more than to pop the body off the frame and just drive the chassis into a tank, you know, and... it comes out rust-free and spray it up and be done.
I can get behind that. That'd be great.
Yeah, be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd like to do that with this goat.
Yeah, that's right. So we've got another interesting project at the shop right now that I love these that pose challenges. This one is a home-built 1969 Camaro. Very, very well done. So it's a full-on pro touring car, mm-hmm. flush glass, tight gas.
Oh, nice.
Twin turbo LS.
Ooh.
Made 975 horsepower.
Wow.
All the top name stuff. So it's a Holley, I believe, a Dominator EFI system and a CNR radiator and, you know, SpeedTech suspension and a T56 Magnum 6-speed and everything you could ask for, except it heats up to operating temperature in like 2 minutes idling.
Oh, that's not supposed to happen.
And no. And if you drive it, you drive it a half a mile, and it's at like 230. And the guy who built the car is pulling his hair out because he's had a lot of different shops look at this, helping him with airflow management. It's got a really cool chin spoiler that ducts air up through the radiator, and he's got electric fans on it and a great, like I said, a CNR radiator, and it just does not cool off. So he finally, he called us, I don't know, a couple of months ago and brought the car down this week. And what we're finding, Trevor has been kind of analyzing this car and using not only laser pyrometers to measure temperature, the ECM temp sensors in the engine, and also thermal cameras. It turns out that we think it's a water flow issue.
You know what? I had that in my head.
Well, you're a Pontiac guy.
Yeah, exactly. I would be surprised if the water pump was spinning backwards.
Yes. Well, it happens with Pontiacs. The LS guys don't have that problem normally. But he observed that the temperature sensors, there's two of them, one for the gauge, one for the ECM, and they were getting like real hot, and the thermal camera was showing that the cylinder heads were getting hot. And even when the thermostat opened, the radiator was still cool. So we don't have the answer yet, but we have evidence that is starting to suggest.
Yeah, I bet he's got like a wrong gasket in there. That's maybe a wrong head gasket that's not letting water flow.
Well, and that's a great point because this is a boosted application. So it could have a slightly blown head gasket.
Oh, yeah, it could.
Where the gasket's sealing surface has pushed away and distorted. We are also not forgetting that a few years ago we built a 71 LS3 C10 pickup truck that wouldn't cool itself, and it was a brand new crate motor. And luckily, being a GM warranty shop, we got a complete replacement engine. GM's like, just take it out and send it back. We're going to give you a new one. And they determined that there was a flaw in the casting.
Yes, I remember talking about that.
Yeah, of the block. It wouldn't have mattered what we did on the cooling side. It never would have cooled itself.
Right.
And this car doesn't have any miles on it. So, I mean, I would hate to think that it's got a bad block, but, you know, we're just in the business of trying to find the problem.
Right.
So that one is, it's a beautiful car. It already won a Good Guys Award in Iowa, in Davenport. And the owner is a super nice guy. And he's like, I got a lot of money in this thing and I got a lot of time. I really just want to drive my car.
Yeah, no doubt. I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
Well, and he's got more money than probably you and I both have in all of our cars, you know, and far more power. So we're hoping that we can get to an answer on this. And those type of problems are great challenges because it makes our team think in different directions and really rely on ways to measure what the problem is and then make decisions.
Yeah, it's having the great tools at your disposal really help as well. I mean, the guys at your shop are supremely talented, but having those laser pyrometers and thermal imaging, you can really see in this particular problem what's going on as far as the temperature issue is concerned. So that helps a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea, and that's why we've invested in all these tools. Yeah. But you also have to have the mentality that when you approach one of these problems that you don't have the answer. You have to let the problem and the car speak to you.
True.
And you have to be smart enough to observe what it's doing and then start to make decisions rather than go, oh, it just needs a thermostat or, oh, it needs a water pump.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want to shotgun parts at it and hope for the best.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because to do the water pump on this car, you probably have to take the coolers out of the front, the radiator, and the it's got a, you know, a whole, it's an AC car, so it's got all those,
a lot of plumbing,
you know, cores. Right, exactly. All that stuff's got to come out. And how aggravated would you be to drain all those systems and then all of a sudden change the water pump and nothing happens? Yeah, yeah. And not to say that that hasn't happened to us either, because every mechanic encounters that at some point. But it really helps you formulate a strategy on how you repair these things. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty neat one.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to see, to get that information, but you have to be able to interpret that information effectively in order mm-hmm. to, you know, diagnose and repair the first time and not just keep going at it.
Yep. Yep. Banging her head against the wall.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. And it was kind of fun today. I took a walk through the shop. We had a couple of challenges, you know, because, and you and I have talked about this before, mm-hmm. we're very fortunate that we operate a hot rod shop, and it's a passion-based business. And it's things that people dig, you know, mm-hmm. you walk out in this room full of cool cars, but it's a business, you know, and if you're not careful, things can go sideways. You can get parts that don't do what they're supposed to do mm-hmm. and you put the time into installing them and then they don't work. And then that's not the customer's responsibility. It's not our fault either. And right. you know, you got these kind of situations you got to navigate, and we had a couple of stressful ones, but today I kind of walked through the shop and looked around and I was like, man, there's some really cool stuff in this building.
Right on.
You know, between that turbo Camaro, we have a 70 Trans Am in the shop, which is another very
you
nice.
You have my attention.
Oh yeah. Very nice pro touring car. The customer lives in the Detroit area, and he built this thing himself, did a wonderful job. It's beautiful. It's white with the blue stripe, blue interior. Mm. It's got a big inch Pontiac motor, and he put some performance suspension parts on it. And it's a nice mix of faithfully restored and modified. So the bottom side is the red oxide primer, you know,
nice.
That it came with from the factory. But again, it's got, you know, bigger sway bars and tubular control arms and big brakes and forge line wheels and everything. But he got to the point where some of the details, he just didn't have the time to finish up. Uh-huh. So it came to our shop for plumbing and some electrical work and Hydro Boost brakes and just taking care of the details. And that car is going to be just a complete showstopper and something that runs really hard. It's a roller Pontiac motor, roller cam, roller valve train. It's already been dynoed. It made a bunch of power, so the risk is low when we go to start it, you know.
Yes.
It's already run. Yeah, you know that story.
Yeah, I know that story.
So that one's kind of in the home stretch to get that thing running and driving, and we're going to do some video on that. And then on the opposite extreme, we've had a couple of like completely stock cars in the shop that just a few years ago you wouldn't really pay attention to. But now it's like, you know what? That's pretty neat. So one of them is an 85 Monte Carlo SS, 50,000 mile car.
Get out of town.
It's white with a red interior, T-top, and I mentioned before, Brian, our parts guy, is a big Monte Carlo guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, pointed out, is he crawling all over it? Huh?
Oh, yeah, the interior special on that one. And then parked next to it was an 84 Camaro Z28.
Nice.
Which, again, is only a 305 HO carbureted car, but it's got 24,000 miles on it.
Gosh, darn
it. And it's like a brand new car. And the customers, both those cars are local to our shop. And they brought them to us because they had both recently purchased them, and they wanted us to kind of, you know, put tires on them and make sure that the brake lines weren't dry rotted or whatever.
Safe, yeah.
But that third gen Camaro, for example, you and I grew up, you know, in the same era. Mm. And when those things came out, of course, we all dreamed about those cars. And for me, when it became, you know, time to where I might be able to afford one of those cars, a lot of them were kind of wiped out already. You know, they were squeaking and they were leaking. And
doors are sagging.
Oh, yeah. And they drove terribly. This thing, it's the nicest driving third gen I've ever been in.
Wow, man.
It's like day one. It's amazing how nice this car is. So, again, we just did a few maintenance items on it, and a sneak peek, that's going to be a Muscle Car of the Week episode.
Oh, dig it.
And I know I'm going to get the flack because it's not really a, you know, a high-powered muscle car.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's important because it's from a time period where Chevrolet was trying to rekindle high-performance cars, and they were just getting past the gas crunch and the onslaught of the imports and all the emissions requirements. And 85, I think, was the last year for the carbureted Camaro. I think 86, they were all TPI.
I think you're right, yeah.
And pretty soon came the 5.7 and, you know, all those. So it's not a, you know, it didn't change the world.
No.
But it's kind of a milestone car.
It is. I mean, for the time, it was definitely, relatively speaking, it was a high-performance car.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about all the other offerings that the big three had and imports had. So it held its own against anything else that was available at the time, I think.
Yes, and I noted that, you know, the engines were victims of the emissions control equipment, but the suspension was not.
True.
So it handles really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it wasn't all worn out, so it, you know, it's just kind of neat. So
that's nice. That's cool, man.
Yeah, and to get that perspective of you know, again, walking through the shop and seeing that thing parked next to that 63 Imperial Crown convertible that we've got sitting there, which is a 413 car. I think it's a 50,000-mile car. They made 520 of them or so.
Get out. Wow.
Yeah, it's a super low-production car, goofy space-age styling. Is, you know, it's like the, it's straight out of the Love Shack, you know.
So, nice.
Got me a Chrysler. It's as big as a whale.
right on.
But a full-on barn find and just a real, it's got a, you know, crazy instrument panel, push-button shift.
Oh, I love it.
Goofy Chrysler 60s stuff. It is awesome. And then parked right next to that is a 69 Mustang that was, it's a 302 car, basically a Mach 1, but it got stolen.
Ooh.
And the owner brought it to us as an insurance job, as a theft recovery repair. So like the door lock cylinder is pulled out and the dash ignition switch got jimmied and the trunk lock got blown out and it got damaged a little bit, but he really loves this car. He drives it a lot. And one of the interesting side benefits of working on these cars is we get to meet the owners. And I don't want to reveal a lot of information about our owners because their lives are private.
Sure.
But this guy's got a job title that is super, super cool.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, I shared the business card with you, and unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to meet him today. Normally, when any customer comes into our shop, I take a minute to talk to him and introduce myself and whatnot. I happen to be on a phone call when this gentleman came through today, so I did not get a chance to talk to him. And then Joe, our sales guy, who's really good with meeting people and you know, learning who they are and, and putting the story to the car. He comes in afterwards and he's like, yeah, you missed out.
Sucker.
Yeah, because this guy's pretty cool. So I hope to be able to get permission from him to reveal a little bit of his information because we meet a lot of very neat people, and he's mm-hmm. definitely one of them. So
sure, man.
So it was a really nice experience today to look at the cool cars and kind of reconnect with some of the cool people that we deal with. And then I thought, you know what, that stress nonsense of a part not fitting, it kind of went away, you know.
Good,
I really
man.
Got nothing to complain about.
It's all about perspective.
Yeah, it is, you know.
Yeah, it's easy to get mired down in the details, in the minutiae of what you're doing. But if you're able to kind of step back, kind of look at everything around you and say, okay, this is all right. Not too bad.
Yes. No, fortunately, I don't work in a salt mine. You know. And I think I texted you and I gave you the old Calgon, take me away.
Yeah. That's when I said, okay, it's time to take a lap.
Yes, and that's what I did. So I took your advice, I took a lap, and I was like, hey, you know what? Life is pretty good.
Good. I'm glad you did that.
Yeah, yeah. And then outside the shop this next week, there's also a lot going on. I'll be traveling. Next week I'll be shooting some video for SEMA, for the SEMA 360 experience.
Cool.
Because as we all know, the SEMA show has been canceled this year, mm-hmm. and we're working to deliver an online experience. So next Tuesday, I will be in a zillion-dollar soundstage in Burbank doing mm-hmm. some intros for the SEMA Hall of Fame inductees, which will be cool.
Nice.
And then some intros and closes for the SEMA 360 thing. And then that next weekend, I will be in Scottsdale running the stage at the Off-Road Expo, which is as it sounds, it's an yeah. expo, so it's kind of a trade show, but open to the public, where you can go there and buy stuff and see some of the latest parts and goodies for everything from, you know, off-road and four-wheel drive trucks and Jeeps to side-by-sides mm-hmm. and everything in between. So that'll be cool too. So
cool. Question about SEMA 360.
Yep.
Is that something that your regular Joe will be able to look at, or is that just industry-only stuff?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's industry only at this point.
Is that right? I mean, the SEMA show generally is. I didn't know right. if the online would be, they would change that a little bit to give more exposure to SEMA or not.
I think initially, here's my take, and I'm not in control of this event, so yeah. you could take my thoughts and throw them out the window. But what they want to do is create an online marketplace that connects buyers and sellers of parts the same way the SEMA show does.
Okay.
Many people have kind of a distorted perspective of what the SEMA show is. Most people think it's a car show, but it's really an industry trade show. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what its roots are. And it's a place where, you know, when Cue Ball Speed Parts releases your new roller camshaft for Pontiacs.
Mm-hmm. It's a big seller.
It's going to be huge.
Oh, ridiculous.
To connect with warehousers and retail establishments mm-hmm. to sell your camshaft. Mm-hmm. So it's a trade thing. But what I think the SEMA 360 experience is going to do, companies are investing into videos and online presentations for SEMA 360 that I believe will live on in the consumer side after.
Okay.
Right? So sure. I think companies are going to be making videos that will be distributed during SEMA week for mm-hmm. the other industry contacts. But I believe that they're going to say, we spent this money to make this video showing off our new product. Mm-hmm. It served its purpose here. Now let's take that same video and get it out there.
Okay.
So that's just my guess. Is
I'm
that
down
the,
with that.
Yeah, that the end user will be able to see a lot of the benefits mm-hmm. of this SEMA 360 thing. But the other side is that SEMA 360 also has a lot of training seminars and educational venues that will be, Zoom meetings and online seminars that won't necessarily be available to the public.
Right.
But they're really not intended for the public and the mm-hmm. public really might not benefit from them. So I think when it comes to the new product knowledge and the feature cars, because they are doing a whole bunch of feature vehicle stuff, I think that stuff will all end up in the public arena at some point.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
I can dig that.
Yeah, good. And I'll be doing daily updates actually from our shop.
Cool.
For SEMA 360. For companies that have signed up to basically, I don't know if subscribe is the right word, but to access the SEMA 360 experience, I'll be doing a daily intro and close recap of all of the events that have happened throughout the day. Right from the V8 Speed Resto Shop, which is pretty exciting.
That is exciting. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Mr. SEMA, add it again.
Well, I'm super fortunate, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's my honor to be able to give back a little bit and contribute whatever I can.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about it all the time. You know, if you work in an industry that says, "Hey, can you help us out?" I mean, that means you're hopefully doing something right.
True. So. Absolutely. Correct.
Whatever they want, I will help with, because mm-hmm. it's an industry that's been very good to us, and it's something that, you know, we're all passionate about. So we dig it.
Dig it.
Yeah. So I think I can hear everybody saying, get on with your nonsense and give us the answers to these trivia questions.
I hear the same thing. I do. All right, so here we go, Kev. I asked you, in a nutshell, what car did, if you called Ghostbusters, what car would they arrive in? And you said a 1959 Cadillac Miller Meteor Ambulance.
That's what I said.
Yeah, that was very specific and also very correct.
Hey!
Congratulations, everybody!
Right on. I nailed the Ecto-1.
You did. And I have to give credit to my phenomenal wife, Jenny, for coming up with that question for me.
Really?
Yeah, well, you know, we kind of pulled this show together at the last second. I'm like, holy cow, I don't have a trivia question. And my wife's like, oh, blink, how about that?
Nice.
And she's amazing at and so creative with coming up with stuff and helping me out with this.
Thank you, Jenny, for picking a question I knew the answer to.
Yeah, right. And she said, he's going to know. I'm like, I know he's going to know. But it's a great question nonetheless.
It was a good question.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, when that movie came out, I saw it in the theater, and it was my life's mission to get one of those.
Is that right?
59 Cadillac ambulances, yeah.
Well, your life ain't over yet.
It's not, but I realized how expensive they are.
Yeah,
and
I bet.
Like I said, my friend Tiff, I think she's got one. She's got a 60, I think. So,
is that right?
Yeah. We'll go drive hers around.
There you go.
All right, well, my friend, I asked you, what was the Hearst Sunshine Special?
Yeah, yes, you did ask me that.
And you said a dealer-ordered bright yellow color scheme, special ordered car, perhaps sunroof, ?
Oh, man. You are the absolute worst.
Well, I will tell you, my friend, that you happen to get that one right.
What?
Yes.
Whoa. Hold the
answer,
everybody.
To be a little more specific, was the 1970 Camaro Z28 Hearst Sunshine Special. The 70 Camaro Z28 was the start of Camaro second generation. It was noted for high performance, of course, boasting the LT1 V8. But the standout version was the Hearst Sunshine Special. It was one of three cars.
Oh, wow.
Built with a prototype power sliding sunroof.
Ba-boom! How about that? Pulled out victory out of the jaws of defeat.
Which actually never made it to production.
Is that right?
That's why it was such a bad question. But of the three cars built, there is one still in existence, and it's part of your buddy Rick Hendrick's collection.
Well, Ricky.
Hendrick Motorsports.
Bring it out. Let's take a look at it.
Yeah, you
I'm
need to
sure
stand
he's
up
a listener.
In that.
I'm talking to you, Rick Hendrick.
Yeah, of course.
I'm sure he's a listener. I'm positive.
So after the COVID goes away and you can go to prom again, you can stand up in the sunroof of the Hearst Sunshine Special.
Well, how about that?
We'll get Great Mr. Hendrick to bring it up.
Right on.
There you go. Reminds me of a segment my college buddy and I did in college radio called News to Me.
Uh-huh.
And that is news to
me. That is news to me, my friend.
Right on.
God darn it. Where do you come up with these damn questions?
I don't know. Don't ask.
Yeah.
Deep in there somewhere.
Right.
All right. Well, that was fun.
It was fun. Good talk.
Yeah, appreciate you kind of helping me whip this episode up quickly.
Happy to do it.
I mean, we do our exhaustive research.
Exhaustive. I am so exhausted right now from all the research.
Yeah, exactly. And we appreciate everybody who listens to this nonsense. We are working on climbing the ranks of iTunes once again. So if you know somebody or yourself who has not yet subscribed, click that subscribe button over there, because we think that's the secret sauce to climbing the ranks, is getting more people to subscribe. And of course, now you can yell at your smart speaker and have your smart speaker play this show, and that's fun too. So and thanks to everybody who listened and provides feedback either on the Facebook group or page or wherever else you listen to the show, which includes, and I have a partial list here, of course, between Amazon, Apple, Google Play, Podbean, Podtrack, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course the VA Radio website at varadio.com. We thank you for checking it out. And what do you think? We'll have another show soon, hopefully.
Soon, hopefully, if you get done traveling.
Well, maybe I'll have a story or two from the road.
Dig it. Maybe we can do a show from the road.
That's a great idea too. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we will find out on the next episode of V8 Radio. So for Mr. Mike Hubal Clark, I'm Kevin Oste, reminding you to keep it under. We'll keep it under 200 this time, and maybe that's a little hint at what we might find out next time.
Oh, boy.
On V8 Radio.